Welcome back to the Rav Hirsch on Parsha series on OU Torah. This week we'll be studying Rav Hirsch's commentary on Parshas Achrimos and Kedoshim. We begin in Perek Yud Ches, towards the end of Parshas Achrimos, at the opening of the section regarding Arayos. And we read in Perek Yud Ches, Pasuk Dalet, as a heading to this chapter. The Torah tells us, "As mishpatai ta'asu v'eschukosai tishmeru lo laches bohem, ani Hashem Elokeichem." You shall do my mishpatim, my laws. V'eschukosai tishmeru, shall guard my chukos, the statutes, lo laches bohem, to walk in their ways. I am Hashem your God. Rav Hirsch here focuses on the difference between the mishpatim and the chukos, which pointing out that In the Torah's Kohanim, Chazal tell us that Mishpatim describe Devarim Haksuvim Batorah, Shilo Nichtavu Badin Hayaluch Chosvan, things that are written in the Torah that even if they had not been written, they should have been written. Meaning they are obligations that one logically understands and one would understand for oneself without them being dictated by the Torah. Chukim, on the other hand, the Torah's Kohanim tells us, Elu Sheyetzer Hara Meshiv Aleihem V'Umo So'olam Meshivin Aleihem. These are commandments regarding which the evil inclination objects to them, and the nations of the world objects to them, because these are mitzvot which are not intuitive, but rather come from divine will, and we don't necessarily understand the logic behind them. So these are Mishpatim and Chukim. Now, Rav Hirsch points out that the section of Arayos is really Chukim. They are restrictions which we don't necessarily understand why it's so, and logically we would not have figured it out for ourselves. Yet, nevertheless, the opening to this section, it begins first with Mishpatim. Es Mishpatai ta'asu, es Chukosai tishmeru lo laches bohem. And Rav Hirsch says the message here is that the Mishpatim are based on the observance of the Chukim. The Chukim are more of a moral order. Mishpatim are more of a social order, as Rav Hirsch puts it, because socially we would understand that certain rules regarding social interactions, and these are Mishpatim. But in order to be able to observe the Mishpatim properly, we need to be people who are sanctified through a moral code of conduct, which is instituted through the chukim, and so even here, rules that are chukim, they are based on observance of mishpatim. So it's mishpatai ta'asu v'eschukosai tishmeru. Now, Rav Hirsch points out that there are different expressions given towards the observance of these mishpatim and chukim. For mishpatim, it says ta'asu, you shall perform them. For chukim, it says tishmeru, you shall guard them. And we generally associate guarding, shmira, with study, with limud haTorah, with studying and understanding the halachos. But then in Pasuk Hey, it combines both mishpatim and chukim under the obligation of both asiya and shmira, performance and safeguarding, i.e. study. In Pasuk Hey it says, Ushmartem es chukosai ve'es mishpatai, you shall guard both the chukim and the mishpatim, asher ya'aseo sam ha'adam v'chai bohem, so that one may perform them and live through them, ani Hashem. So here in Pasuk Hey, it's both chukim and mishpatim combined under the obligations of shemira and asiya. Although in Pasuk Dalet first, the Pasuk assigns asiya to mishpatim and shemira to chukim. So Rav Hirsch explains that at first, you don't necessarily have to study the laws regarding mishpatim. They are intuitive. They are what Chazal call mitzvot sichlios. From the seichel, we could figure them out without needing a divine command to bind us to do so. So we would think we don't have to study these mishpatim. Es mishpatai ta'asu. It's merely sufficient to follow the rules, follow the mitzvos, the mishpatim, and that will be enough. With the chukim, it's the opposite. The chukim are what's called by Chazal mitzvot shmiyos, from shema, to hear, to listen. Their origin is in the fact they come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and without that, we would never have understood to follow these rules. And so for chukim, it's understood that they require study. We need to open up the Torah, we need to open up Torah Shebaal Peh, and understand the halachos regarding chukim, because without these halachos, without knowledge of these halachos, we won't know what to do. It doesn't come naturally. However, it's easy once you get involved in the study of these chukim to not necessarily be careful about fulfilling them. Because since they're not intuitive, the benefits of these chukim is not easily understood, and therefore one is more susceptible to study them but not necessarily be so conscientious to keep them properly. So at first, the Torah tells us, as mishpatai ta'asu v'schukosai tishmeru, because to a certain extent, these are the most important aspects of these different areas. For the mishpatim, it's important that we emphasize the performance because the study is not as crucial. For the chukim, we emphasize study because that has to be the important first step. But following that, in Pasuk Hey, the Torah tells us that, puts them together and says, "Ushmartem es chukosai ves mishpatai asher ya'ase osam." That shemira and asiyah are both essential to the chukim and mishpatim, even if it's not necessarily clear that that's so. Because the mishpatim require study. Because even the mishpatim, which we would have figured out logically, they carry a certain divine meaning that is beyond us. The mishpatim are in such a way are set up not because they're rights that every individual has, but because the Torah assigns those rights for certain reasons. And these mishpatim carry out justice as Hashem sees it, and we must study the mitzvos to understand how this is so, how the different minutia of each mitzvah, each of the mishpatim, are designed in a way to carry out the mishpat of Hashem. And that's why there's two psukim in Tehillim that our first points out that hint to this idea. One is in Kapitel Yotes, where it says, Mishpatei Hashem emes tzadikui achdav, that the laws, the mishpatim of Hashem are emes, are the absolute truth, and tzadikui achdav means they are all accurate together. They're all righteous when looked at all together, because they're always fair. It's not that one person's rights are abrogated at the expense of someone else, because that person is correct in a certain situation, but it's fair to everyone, because every person gets what is just as far as he is concerned. And that's why also verse points to a second pasuk in Tehillim, in a capital Kuf Mem Zayin, which we say in Pesukah Zimra, where it says, Lo asochein l'chol goy u'mishpatim bal yada'um. To the other nations, Hashem has not even taught them mishpatim bal yada'um, has not informed them about mishpatim, because even though they may understand it logically, the reasons behind it, and how they are part of Hashem's master plan in this world, that they don't understand. They don't understand the divine origin of the mishpatim. So mishpatim also need to be studied. Chukim also need to be observed. And that's why it's important that the Asher Ya'ase Osam covers both chukim and mishpatim, because even though we need to study them so we understand them, because without studying them we have no clue what the chuk is all about, but once we study them we need to perform the mitzvah as well, perform the chukim. And reverse points to the Mishnah and Avos, Lo hamidrash ha'ikar elo hamase. Study is not the main purpose, but it's only as far as it leads to fulfillment of the mitzvah. And then Rav Hirsch also points to another Gemara in Brachos, which, based on the pasuk Seichel Tov L'chol Osehem, the mitzvos grant Seichel Tov, the an understanding of what is good to all those who l'chol, to all those who perform the mitzvot and brachos. Daf Yud Zayin, Chazal tell us l'lom dehem lo ne'amar. It doesn't say that such an understanding of what is good is granted to those who study the mitzvot, el l'osehem, to those who perform the mitzvot. The practice of the mitzvot is the most important thing. And so both chukim and mishpatim are combined under shemira and asiyah. Rav Hirsch then discusses this phrase laleches b'hem, that we are to walk in their ways, and shows and cites what Chazal say on this pasuk in Torah's Kohanim. It says laleches b'hem asem ikor v'al ta'asem tfela. We should make them the most important thing and not secondary. And leches b'hem shelo yehi masoacha matanucha ela b'hem. Your involvement should only be with them, with mitzvos. Shelo tera b'hem dvarim achirim b'olim. We shouldn't mix anything together with them. Shelo tomar, one should not say lo madti chochmas Yisrael el mar chochmas umos olam. That I've already learned Jewish knowledge and wisdom. I now will now go and learn the wisdom of the other nations. Talmud lomar, but the pasuk tells us leches b'hem. We are to walk in their ways. You may never leave them. We are only to walk in their ways. And Rav Hirsch explains, and with here in this commentary, forms one of the underpinnings of his hashkafa of Torah and Derech Eretz, is that the opening sentence of asem ikar va'al ta'asem tfela, to make Torah the ikar and not the secondary matter in our lives when compared to other studies. But he says that the concept ikar is a relative term, and it doesn't mean that we is to the exclusion of secular studies, that one may not study any other area of knowledge other than Torah, but we are to asem ikar, to make Torah the most important and primarily occupy ourselves with Torah, with meaning being that all other areas of study are to be secondary to Torah, such that they are subordinated to the Torah and to be used to help us understand Torah. And so we can only study areas, of her says, which are in accordance with the truth of the Torah and can be accepted as and are not contradictory to Torah values. And that which we do study should be done with the focus of enabling us to improve our understanding of Torah, and it should be viewed from the perspective of Torah itself. That the way we look at the other studies of the natural sciences and the rest and the world around us is to be viewed through the perspective of the Torah, so that we do not adopt ideas that are not in agreement with Torah values. He says the Torah is not the equivalent of other sciences and other studies. The Torah is not just one branch of knowledge, and then that's what Chazal are telling us. One should not say, I have studied Chachmas Yisrael, and I will go learn Chachmas Umas Olam, as if they are two different areas of study. But rather, the Torah, the Chachmas Yisrael, is the sole area of study. It encompasses all the entire world around us and the entire human experience. And the rest of the Chachmos are limited because they are seen through human perspective. And if we look at those areas of study through the wisdom of the Torah, which is the divine wisdom, then we will be able to absorb the knowledge from them and put it in proper context through the perspective of the Torah. It's not that, and here's where the Torah im Derech Eretz, the Hashkafa, is that the Derech Eretz is to be subordinate to the Torah, and we study the Derech Eretz in a way that is guided by Torah. It's not that they are two distinct areas and we put them side by side, but that the Torah guides our whole lives. And it guides us in the way that we look at the studies of the world around us, and the way that we look at the natural sciences and the way that we relate to other branches of knowledge. It's not that we view the two separately and that they're completely divorced from one another, and there's religious matters and there's secular matters, but that even secular matters are looked at through the lens of the Torah. And this is a crucial part of Hirsch's Hashkafa as it relates to education, as it relates to our attitude towards the world around us. And then Hirsch comments on an expression in Pasuk Hey here, where it says, "Ushmartem es chukos seves mishpatai asher ya'ase osam ha'adam v'chai b'hem," that man should perform these mitzvos and live through them. And Rav Hirsch cites again Chazal and Toras Kohanim that that picks up on the phrase ha'adam. This word, Rav Hirsch doesn't say asher ta'asu osam, that you shall do them and live through them, but says that a man shall do them. And Chazal tell us that it says a man. And it doesn't say that Jews shall do them, that Kohan and Levim Yisraelim should do them, but that is Adam, that any man can do them, and concludes, based on this expression, that a goy ho'oses ha'Torah harehu k'kohen gadol, that a goy who keeps the Torah is the equivalent of a kohen gadol. He is just, he is equal to the kohen gadol, because he also fulfills the law of Hashem. And what Rav Hirsch says that we see from here, that any person is capable of drawing close to Hashem through the Torah and mitzvos, which are designed to help us reach our full potential. And it's also interesting, Rav Hirsch says, doesn't say that doing mitzvos transforms us into supernatural beings. That's not true at all. But rather, when we perform the mitzvot, we are Adam. Asher ya'aseh osam ha'adam v'chai bohem. We are fulfilling our human destiny. We are. The mitzvot are designed to help us maximize the potential that is within us, because it is within our grasp, within our ability to develop a relationship and become closer to Hashem. And this is the human destiny. It's not that we have to overcome our human nature and we have to rise to the level of malachim. That is not what the mitzvot demand of us at all. But they demand us to rise up to our calling as human, as people, as human beings, which is to be created b'tzelem Elohim, and we accomplish this by following the mishpatim and the chukim that Hashem has given us, and then v'chai bohem. That will truly give us life, because this is the true life that we have been designated for. And this is the mission of Ha'adam, of all humanity, with us, the Jewish people, being designated as Hashem's chosen nation to be a role model for all of humanity. But in truth, this is the mission for all of mankind, not just for us. And one day, eventually, we will see. We hopefully all of humanity will come around to our understanding of human destiny, of what it means to be an Adam and to be alive. Asher ya'aseh osam ha'adam b'chai b'hem. It is through these chukim mishpatim that we truly have life. Let's move on now to Parshas Kedoshim, and through this parsha has many mitzvos contained within it, and Rav Hirsch is of course spends significant time going through each of these mitzvos, explaining their connection to previous and subsequent mitzvos in the parsha, the flow of all the mitzvos and the meaning behind each mitzvah. In Parak Yotes Pasuk Yud Ches, we read of the famous maxim, "V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha Ani Hashem," that we should love your fellow as yourself. And Rav Hirsch points out that it does not say "V'ahavta es reacha kamocha." It's not "V'ahavta es reacha kamocha." Mean you should love your fellow as yourself. You should love his personality. You should love him for who he is. And Rav Hirsch says does not say that. That is not what "V'ahavta reacha kamocha" means. It meant that we say "V'ahavta es reacha kamocha," but it does not say that, because that is nearly impossible, because we do not relate to the personality of others, and we do not have an affinity for every single person for who he is. That is just human nature. We find it very rarely in certain relationships. He points to the friendship of David and Yehonah's son, which is mentioned in Pirkei Avos and singled out as a true friendship. And there, the pasuk says, "Vayehovehu Yehonah's son kenafsho." Yehonah's son loved David like himself. But that was loving him for who he was. That's not what the Torah says here. What it says is, "Vahavta lireacha kamocha." And lireacha means that which is to your friend, to your fellow, meaning that which belongs to him or that which is his, meaning his welfare, his circumstances in life, that which he is dealing with, for that you should have a care for, that you should love. And we are to seek the welfare of those around us, and just as we would seek our own welfare, and to rejoice in the happiness of others as we would rejoice in our own, and to assist others who are dealing with difficult times, and comfort them when they need it. These are the requirements that are given to us with the phrase "Bahabta lireacha kamocha." You should love or have a concern for that which is to your friend, that which is to your fellow, that which pertains to him. Even if you don't necessarily feel an affinity for him, for his personality, for him as a person, you don't necessarily want to be his friend, let's say. But we still have an obligation to be concerned for his welfare. And that's something that applies to us regarding all other people, regardless of how we feel about them as a person. And that's why the pasuk concludes, "Ani Hashem." Because the basis of this requirement of "Hafla Recha Kamocha" is not because we feel friendly to this person or because we like him, but it's because we are all creatures of Hashem, and Hashem has told us to, commanded us to look out for the welfare of one another, and the reason why Hashem has commanded us to do so is because the way Rav Hirsch puts it. For a person who follows the ways of Hashem does not view his own welfare any differently from the welfare of his neighbor. Why does a person seek his own welfare? If in the understanding of the Torah, a person should seeks his own welfare because he views himself as a tzelem Elokim. He received his own life as a chesed from Hashem, and Hashem has given him his life. And that responsibilities come along with that to fulfill his destiny as a tzelem Elokim, to perfect himself by following in Hashem's ways and emulating Hashem. He loves himself because he is a creature of Hashem, and every other person, his neighbor, is also a creation of Hashem, who also was created by Hashem for the purpose of perfecting himself and serving Hashem. And so, in my mind, the Torah tells me I should view my own welfare, my concern for my neighbor's welfare is important because it is based on the same reasoning as my concern for my own welfare. And so, if I look out for somebody else, I'm looking out for another Tzelem Elokim, the same reason that I look out for myself. And that's why "V'havta lireacha kamocha" is stamped with "Ani Hashem" at the end. Rav Hirsch then points to the Gemara, which says that "V'havta lireacha kamocha" is the source in the Gemara for the concept of treating a someone who is about to be executed with dignity. Because even if he's a criminal, we still view him as a tzelem Elokim. We still have responsibility towards him, the same way we have responsibility to ourselves. In the Gemara in Shabbos, it says that Hillel once told someone who came to him and asked him to teach him the entire Torah while standing on one foot. And Hillel said to him, "D'aloch saneh l'chavroch lo sa'avid." That which is hateful to you, do not do to your neighbor. And then Hillel says, "Zohi kol haTorah kula." This is all that is in the Torah. V'idach perusha. The rest of the Torah is just an explanation on this idea. Zil Gemara, go and study it. And he sent him away. He taught him the entire Torah in one line. That which is hateful to you, do not do to someone else. And the verse explains, this seems to be a summary of V'habta l'recha kamocha, just in negative terms instead of positive terms. But the reason why this encompasses the entire Torah is because the entire Torah is about not doing the Allah saneh, that which is hateful to you, because that's what the Torah is all about. The entire intent of the Torah, the reason why it's given to us, is to keep us away from anything that is hateful to us, does not benefit us. It keeps us away from things that will harm us. We have certain things, certain activities are declared averos because they are harmful to our spiritual nature. And certain actions are defined as mitzvos because they enhance our spiritual nature and they bring us closer to Hashem. And so, just as I observe Torah, I observe all of Torah mitzvos because it's not something that is good for me. And similarly, I should treat my friend well because I want to enable him to serve Hashem as well. And the rest of the Torah is really just a perush on this idea. Rav Hirsch says this is what Hillel means. The Allah saneh l'chavroch lo saved is kol haTorah kula. And then Rav Hirsch says what Hillel does not mean is what we refer to as the golden mean, the golden rule of do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Versus do unto others as you would have others do unto you is just for the purpose of self-preservation. It's a matter of I want other people to be nice to me, and I understand that if I'm nice to others, they'll be nice to me, and if I'm not nice to others, they won't be nice to me. So out of self-interest, I am nice to others. That's not what V'ahavta l'recha kamocha is. V'ahavta l'recha kamocha is guided by the idea of Ani Hashem, that Hashem has created all of us, and therefore we have to have respect and love for everything that exists because Hashem created it, and because it belongs to Him, and that is the basis for our V'ahavta l'recha kamocha. So it's an interesting idea because this means that despite whatever we think about other people, we don't have to feel like, well, I don't like so-and-so, so V'ahavta l'recha kamocha I don't like him. I can't like him. But V'ahavta l'recha kamocha has nothing to do with what we feel about the other person or how much we like him or whether we think he could be a good friend. It has to do with the fact that everybody's created by Hashem, and because of that, we are to have a concern for the welfare of all our fellow human beings. In Perek Yotes Pasuk Chaf Dalid, we read about the mitzvah of Neta Ravai. Neta Ravai follows the mitzvah of Arla. Arla declares, Arla tells us that in the first 3 years of a fruit tree, we are not to eat its fruit. We are to leave the fruit alone. It is forbidden. In the fourth year, as it says, Pasuk Chaf Dalid, Uvashanohar V'is, in the fourth year, Yiyeh Kol Piryo, Kodesh Hilim LaHashem. All the fruit will be holy for Hashem, sanctified for Hashem, but it uses the phrase Kodesh Hilulim. Hilulim from the expression of Hallel, to praise Hashem. So the first explains that the fruit of the fourth year is sanctified in a way that enables us to praise Hashem. And the rules of Netar Ravai are that the fruit has to be brought to Yerushalayim and eaten there, like Maaser Sheni. Or alternatively, the fruit can be redeemed onto money, and that money can be brought to Yerushalayim and spent there on food to be eaten there. And Rav Hirsch says such an action of taking the food to Yerushalayim results in hilulim l'Hashem, a praise to Hashem. And Rav Hirsch elsewhere defines the word halel as it means reflection, to reflect the light of Hashem, to reflect the kindness of Hashem back to him by praising him and giving thanks to him. And so when one takes the fruit of the fourth year, and this is the first year in which he is entitled to eat the fruit of the tree, and he brings it to Yerushalayim into the proximity of the Mikdash, so what this does is signifies that that the produce that is growing in the field is not just a result of our own personal efforts, but that they depend on Hashem's hashgacha and Hashem's bracha, and which comes as a result of if we subordinate ourselves to the Mikdash in Yerushalayim, to the ideals expressed through the Mikdash and through the Hashem's presence, through serving Hashem, whose presence is felt in the Mikdash. And so the first fruits of this tree are taken to Yerushalayim in the fourth year, the first year where we are entitled to eat it, they're taken to Yerushalayim and eaten there in proximity to the Mikdash, expressing this idea that all the blessings in the field, in this tree, are granted to us because we serve Hashem, and because Hashem blesses us so. And then all future crops that come from this tree are eaten under the guiding influence of the experience of taking the first fruits in the fourth year to Yerushalayim. Subsequent years' crops are appreciated in light of the required trip to Yerushalayim in the fourth year. And Rav Hirsch compares this to understands this in light of the pasuk in Tehillim in Kapitel Kuf Lam and Gimel, when there the pasuk says, "Kital Charmon Al Haray Tzion," that it says that the dew on Charmon, which is on the mountains of Tzion, Kisham Tziva Hashem Es Habracha Chayim Ad HaOlam, for Hashem has commanded bracha there, which will provide life forevermore. And it's the Tal Chermon is Al Hararei Tzion. Chermon, of course, is the mountain and the northernmost part of Eretz Yisrael. And the dew, the Tal Chermon, the dew on Chermon is considered to be like Al Hararei Tzion, as if it is falling on Har Tzion, because Kisham Tziva Hashem Es HaBracha, all bracha has its source in Har Tzion, then it is manifest on Har Hermon. But it all has its source on Har Tzion in the Mikdash, because when we view all of life through the prism of the Mikdash, then we have the bracha wherever we might be. And then, even our physical enjoyment, as signified by the Tal on Hermon, or the fruits here, the Netzah Ravai, our physical enjoyments of eating are lifted up as an act of serving Hashem when viewed through the prism of the Mikdash. And so we learn the concept of transferring the sanctity of the fruits onto money, which is called chilul, from the related word chilul to hilul. Kodesh hilulim, the Gemara and Brachos in the sixth parak relates from that says that kodesh hilulim can be read as kodesh chilulim, that the sanctity can be mechulal, can be redeemed and onto money, and you bring the redemption value up to Yerushalayim and eat and then spend the money there, but this is that the chilul and hilul are really the same, because the act of chilul expresses the hilul, the act of praise to Hashem, because by putting the value of the fruit on money, which one will take to Yerushalayim, one expresses the importance of the going to Yerushalayim with the value of these fruits to view them in light of the Mikdash. And this pasuk of kodesh chilulim is the source in the Gemara there for the mitzvah brachos hanenin of making brachos on food, because what chilul on money does in action, Rav Hirsch says, the brachos do in words. That with words we praise Hashem, and eat our food in light of a declaration to Hashem that the food comes from Him, and that we must partake of the food with the intention to better serve Hashem through it. And Rav Hirsch cites the Gemara in Talmud Yerushalmi, which calls the brachos pidyono shel olam umlo'o, the redemption of the world and all that is in it. Meaning, when one recites a bracha, one redeems the food, which is sacred for Hashem, because it's meant to be used for Hashem's purposes, and thus one redeems them by his declaration that he will be eating them in the service of Hashem, and then one is entitled to eat them with that perspective. Another important result of these laws of Arla Neta Ravair, cites from the Gemara in Beitza, where it says, Nitiya mikateha raglehon de katzvaya udvoale nidos. That the rules regarding Arla and Neta Ravai undercut those who wish to eat meat that isn't properly salted, and also those who have a desire to transgress the restrictions of Nida. The idea being that Arla teaches us self-control. One has to wait 3 years before planting a tree, and the fourth year he has to eat it in a certain way. It's a certain self-restraint that is taught here, which will then be able to be applied in other areas of life. But this is one area where it's basically a training exercise in self-control by waiting a few years before enjoying the fruit of the tree. One last mitzvah which I want to single out to look at Rav Hirsch's explanation is in Perek Yutes Pasuk Chav Zayin. We read, Lo sakifu pa'as roshechem v'lo sashchis es pa'as zekonecha. You shall not round off the corners of your head. You shall not destroy the corners of your beard. These are the mitzvah of peos and hashchas hazakon. Peos, we know not to cut the sideburns. The law of lo sashchis pa'as zekonecha is not to destroy the corners of the beard, and which today manifests itself in not using a razor to shave the beard, because there's a prohibition against destroying it. And using a razor would destroy the hair by uprooting it entirely. What is the reason for these prohibitions? So Hirsch explains that the brain has is basically divided into two main areas. The front of the head is the cerebrum, which governs, which covers intellectual, or rather, it's the thinking mind, not necessarily the sensory part of the brain, but it's the part which what Rav Hirsch calls the human element of the mind. The intellect, whereas the cerebellum, the back of the brain, its primary function is in sensory areas, and it's more what Rav Hirsch calls the animal element in human beings. And so the hair of the peos, the temple, the sideburns, really are opposite the fissure in the brain that divides these two areas. And by keeping these sideburns, the peos, it divides between the animal and the human parts of the brain, such that the human part in the front of the brain is all that is visible to another person. Because when a person is looking at me straight on, all they can see is the front of my head, because the back of my head is blocked by the peos, which remain in place in the middle of my head, and prevent someone else from seeing the back of my head when they're looking at me from the front. And what this does, it stresses the our spiritual side, it stresses our intellectual side, and de-emphasizes the animal side of our human nature. We block that off because we want people to only see the human element, the spiritual element within us. That is to be the primary element within us, and that is to control the animal element and use the animal element in its service, and not vice versa. Our first point is that even that every human being, both male, female, and of all ages, have hair at the temples in the sideburn area. It's only men that are required to keep it there and not cut it, because women are innately more in line with the spiritual values and do not require such a prohibition. Rav Hirsch points out that even a newborn infant is born with hair in this area, because from the moment we are born, we are inscribed with the sign of our human mission. The same goes, Rav Hirsch says, for the prohibition against destroying the beard, the corners of the beard, because there is a similar relationship between the upper jaw and the lower jaw. The upper jaw is really passive, when it comes to eating. It's more belongs to the brain, this and the intellectual activity of the head, whereas the lower jaw is really separate, has a more active role in the eating process, involves the tongue and all the muscles involved in chewing, and the teeth. And so the lower jaw is the active part during eating and is more the physical element in the face. And so one is forbidden to shave the beard, to destroy the beard, because when he says when a man grows of age, and the men being more inclined to following the animal instincts than women, so the man grows a beard as he becomes an adult, because the beard is meant to cover the parts of the face which are primarily used in animal activities and sensual activities. And when one looks at the person, he would only see the man. He would only see the spiritual parts of his face. And it's a reminder to us on what we should prioritize, what's the most important part of our human nature. And Torah, the first says, permits us to remove the beard. But when we do so, we don't use a razor, because we don't destroy that covering. We may take it away, but we don't want to destroy it permanently, because that would signify that we do not want to retain our what he calls our human mission, because it would by destroying the covering of the sensual aspect of our face, we would be saying that this is equally important to the human part of our existence. Rav Hirsch also says that the points out that the pasuk addresses these two prohibitions differently. Lo sakifu pa'as roshchem, the mitzvah of the peos, is addressed in the plural, whereas lo sashchis es pa'as zekonecho is addressed to the individual. You should that you, the individual in singular, shall not destroy the corner of your beard, because the sign of the peos is visible to all, so it's addressed to the community as a whole. Everybody knows, everybody can see whether a person has peos or not. Everyone can see it's a visible mark on the head of all Jewish men that signifies what's important to us in our lives and what's the most important part of our human nature. But when it comes to using a razor on the beard, destroying the beard, that is not necessarily obvious to someone else who's looking at somebody. You can't tell whether a person shaved with a razor or shaved with some other implement. And so it's addressed to the individual, because really it's a lav in the Torah which is addressed to every individual. The message is just for him. Nobody else will know whether he used a razor or not. And it's addressed to the private thoughts of every single person to act appropriately, not use a razor, and understand the thoughts behind it, and recognize what should truly be the most important aspect of his nature, of his being, to emphasize the spiritual aspects of our nature, and to de-emphasize the physical aspects, and only use those physical aspects in as much as they enable us to accomplish our spiritual goals.